Penguin Random House Audio presents The Sixth Man, a memoir by Andre Iguodala with Carvel Wallace. Read for you by Sullivan Jones with an introduction read by Andre Iguodala.
To young fella, stay black.
Introduction.
It was the whole summer that changed me. Of course, everything changes you. But still, there are moments that do it more than others. Moments where life unfolds itself to you, peels away its layers piece by piece until you realize there is an entire universe of possibility right there staring, unblinking, back at you. That summer, that entire universe of possibility was in, of all places, Orlando, Florida. Disney World, to be precise. It was the farthest away I'd ever been from my home in Springfield, Illinois. I was about to be a senior in high school. It was 2001. The Jay-Z song Izzo, Hova, came out, and we couldn't get enough of it. Our basketball team was bumping it that whole Florida trip, and it was the first thing I'd really bonded over with the Chicago kids, the first thing that made me feel like I belonged. Compared to them, I was a hayseed, this skinny kid with big ears from Springfield, Illinois. They used to tease me. My clothes were behind, my slang was behind. Half the stuff they were talking about, I had no idea what it was. I tried to blend in, but I couldn't. It was too obvious that I was a small-town kid playing on an amateur athletic union, AAU, team with kids from the city. When you come from a town like Springfield, you just don't know how you compare to the entire world that is out there. That's the hardest part. You have no point of reference. Then all of a sudden, you find yourself on a bus in Florida on the way to a national basketball tournament at a place called Disney World. You are looking out the window at vast boulevards and palm trees seemingly weighted down by the sweat in the air, at strip malls and long, tall grass fields for miles, at a surface so hot and so foreign to you that it might as well have been mercury. I didn't understand what was happening in my life. The ground was moving beneath my feet. I had entered the summer thinking I was a pretty good high school basketball player, but mostly I just loved the game. I loved feeling the emotions of a contest, how things would ebb and flow with a team over two halves. I loved sensing where my teammates were going to be cutting, firing the ball to a guy with a crisp pass and watching him catch it and lay it in all in one unbroken movement. I liked playing basketball with my best friend on the squad, Rich McBride. He was from Springfield too, but he was already more of a national name than I was. Basketball magazines had him highly ranked, and he had started on the varsity squad as a freshman. He was a star, a big enough deal that everyone took him seriously. I always felt like I was the second guy when he was around. Not quite as cool, not quite as famous. I just liked to practice. I just liked to get better. I just liked to take shots alone in the gym until my legs threatened to give out. I just liked to watch games from the sidelines, trying to understand what every player was doing, what every coach was thinking. I just wanted to be as good as I could, learn as much as I could. I just wanted to earn my place. But weird things were happening. I had just gotten an invitation to a Nike camp earlier that summer, and that was next level. Nike camp was only for the top players in the country. I didn't think I was among that class for sure, but nonetheless, there I was. I went there and tried to do my best. Keep it fundamental, don't make any mistakes, try not to get beat. I left not knowing how I had done, but within a month, I had been contacted by coaches of Division I basketball programs around the country. Nolan Richardson at Arkansas, Gary Williams at Maryland, Roy Williams from Kansas, Lute Olson from Arizona. It was surreal. Okay, so maybe I was going to be good enough to go to college, but still, I was just a second fiddle on my own AAU team. Then there was Peach Jam, another tournament we played earlier in the summer. I got there and saw some of the best players I had ever seen in my life. In particular, there was a dude named Rashad McCants, a 6'4" guard out of a prep school in New Hampshire. He was, and I have no doubt about this, one of the top five basketball players I've ever seen, on any level, period. To this day, I believe that is true. Yet he only played in the league for 3 years. How is that possible? The answer to that question is not something I will learn until much later in life. I will learn that the higher up you go in this game, the more replaceable you become. I will learn that being the best was not a guarantee of a career, that a career was made of myriad things, of small, boring things, of good agents and early morning workouts, of medical procedures and yoga and nutritionists, of sleep hygiene and the ability to tamp your emotions down so hard that they first become stones and then diamonds that you only reveal when there are 3 seconds on the clock and you are down by 2 points and you have to see, understand, and predict the movements of 10 men on a basketball court at one time while 45,000 people are screaming at you. A career is made of these things. It is made of broken fingers and trade rumors and coaches you can't quite trust and the occasional referee who reminds you a little too much of the police officers that stalked your neighborhood when you were a kid, glowering at you and your friends as though you were dangerous animals escaped from captivity rather than children. A look that gives you a cold chill, a fight or flight response that will lie dormant and coiled and always ready to spring at the base of your spine for the rest of your life. I didn't know any of this yet. I was a kid. I liked Jay-Z. I wanted to fit in. I kept growing out of my clothes. I didn't want to embarrass myself or my team at the tournament. I liked making people laugh. I used to take the tobacco out of one of our assistant coach's cigarettes and put it back in his pack. And when he lit it up, the whole thing went up in flames. We thought it was hilarious. He used to get so pissed. I had no idea people were obsessed with their cigarettes like that. At Peach Jam, we made it to the Final Four, but we didn't win. I felt like everything in the last game was happening too fast for me. Dudes were too quick, too sharp. I didn't know how to keep up, and it felt like I couldn't get over the hump. It was disappointing. I had done my best, but it wasn't good enough. The summer was moving along. I had been to Nike camp. I had played okay at Peach Jam, but I still felt like I was swimming upstream. At the Disney World tournament, we were in the semifinals against some East Coast team, maybe from D.C. or Baltimore. I wasn't yet used to having full-on confidence when I played against kids from other cities, but I was used to drafting off the confidence of those Chicago boys on my team. Collectively, we didn't feel like we needed to back down from anybody, no matter where they came from. But now it seemed that guys were actually keying in on me. I could see the team and coach looking at me during timeouts. When I got the ball, there would be a dude in my chest, sometimes two, like immediately. It started to dawn on me that, for some reason, these guys were treating me as though I was the man on the team. In Springfield, while playing on junior varsity and varsity teams, I had seen guys double-team me, make me the priority, but it was not hard to manage there. Down here in Florida, however, it was a whole different ball game. These were 17, 18-year-old guys, elite guys, guys who were about to start at Division I programs. This was not high school basketball. It was something different. When they were on me, I couldn't breathe. These guys on me were getting after it, dogging my every twitch. We managed to hang around in that game, never getting too far behind, but I was not able to produce the kind of offense I was used to. We got to the end of the game, and there were 3 or 4 seconds left on the clock. They scored, we were down 2. We called a timeout so we could advance the ball to the other end of the court. There wasn't much to say during the timeout. I mean, as good as we all were, this was still AAU. No one was drawing up elaborate plays. It was basically just getting the ball, going down, and shooting. We had this one white kid on the team, a smart dude, very fundamentally sound. Coach drew up a play for him to get the ball and make something happen. As we were walking back onto the court, he turned to me and said, "Andre, I'm coming to you, man. Be ready." Me? Was I the guy that teams go to when they're down 2 with seconds on the clock? Dude got the ball, took one dribble, found me away from the basket. I had to be like 35 feet out, if I remember correctly. Damn near half court, it felt like. I didn't think. I didn't hope. I didn't wish. I just shot. It was so simple. There was no distance between me and anything in the world. I just shot the ball as naturally as if I were taking a breath. As I shot it, a defender was flying toward me, kind of brushed me a touch, and I fell backward out of my own momentum. All I saw was him standing over me, and behind him I could just barely make out the ball going through the net. Swoosh. Everybody was going crazy. You don't even know what you're doing in that moment. You're just jumping and running and screaming, hugging whoever. We were teenage boys in Florida in the summer of 2001, covered in sweat, a million miles away from a classroom, jumping up and down, waving our arms, and running like kindergartners at an unsupervised slumber party, hopped up on bottomless bowls of Halloween candy. Eventually, we remembered ourselves.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?